these guys can't hear the lead-in music. I changed it up this week, and I turned the cue off, so you guys can't hear it, but any of you guys sitting around a table get around to listening to this week's, prepare to rock your brains out. Couple of things we just had this little chat before we came on the air, and then we did put a Facebook posting out this evening. Tonight's show is going to be the last one that we do live. We wanted to have a little bit more flexibility. We're going to continue doing it as a podcast, which are becoming more and more popular these days. So look for the Mead House in the typical location, Stitcher, Podcastpedia, of course, our own website, themeadhouse.com. So we're going to focus on doing it strictly as a podcast. Now, we'll still have live guests on occasion. And, hey, if you want to call the show, nothing has changed as far as our scheduling goes. We're still doing the recorded show at 9 p.m. on Tuesday night. So that's not foreseeable future. So, but we'll certainly put some information up on the Facebook. In fact, I might even task one of these guys with it. And at least you kind of give you a heads up what we're going to be talking about in the next week or two, and give you an opportunity to call the show if you've got something to say or want to get in on a discussion. So with that, you know, our replays are always available at the Mead House, iTunes, Stitcher, Podcastpedia, we're happy that you're here. Next week, guys, I got this reminder from Ryan today. Next week, former Mazer Cup winner. I don't know if is he a former Mazer Cup winner, Ryan, or Mazer Cup winner? How would you say that?
I would just say Mazer Cup winner. He won a medal last year.
Last year, yeah, because we don't want to, you know, we know the Mazer Cup is going on now, so we don't want to confuse anybody. But Greg Fisher from Wild Blossom Meadery, he'll be in the house with us here at the table. He's out of Chicago, so we'll look for that next week. And thanks, Ryan, for putting that together. The Facebook deal, you know where it's at, the Mead House. Just simply type in the Mead House up there, and that little search deal will come right up. Getting a lot of activity there as well. The website, you ought to know by now, themeadhouse.com. That's where we live. Ryan Richardson in the house tonight because he's allergic to shellfish. We'll get into that here in a little bit. Aaron Martin along for the ride. Mississippi, Chris Spencer, Jeff Schaus in the house. My name is J.D. Webb. Jeff, did you find anything on Facebook worth talking about here tonight?
Well, you know, actually, concerning guests, I did see something on Facebook that was really, really interesting. I wanted to bring up. It's the only thing I have to talk about tonight. One of our first guests, Eric Newquist, actually posted on Mead Makers this week a comparison side by side, showing a batch that he had put some bentonite in primary on and a batch that he hadn't put any findings in. And it made a really dramatic difference. This was on the advice of another person that's pretty active. In fact, I think he's one of the admins on the Mead Makers group, John Talkington. And there's some ongoing discussion with
throw that dog a bone.
There's some ongoing discussion with using bentonite as a fining agent and how it can kind of leave a gritty taste or a minerally taste, sometimes when used after, you know, secondary or in bulk aging or things like that. Apparently doing that in primary alleviates that problem and leaves you with a really nice, settled, clear batch. So that struck me as something that I want to check out in the future too, just as another way to make a nice, clear mead that's ready a little bit faster.
You know, these wine kits that I do come with a little package of bentonite, and the instructions call for you to add, that's the first thing that goes into your fermenter is the bentonite, mm-hmm. With some hot water and keep it moving, pour it in, stir it up, and then add your juice. So, I don't see that, why that wouldn't work for mead too, you know?
Right. And I think it's by that same kind of a logic that, you know, winemakers do this. So why wouldn't it work for mead that, that the idea initially came up in the first place, but, it looks like Eric is getting some good results from doing that. And so it seems like something I might want to try myself.
Yeah. You know, I don't like putting, I mean, I've got that two part, and I can't ever remember the name of those two chemicals, that go in there, but, it's that clear.
Tyrosan and Kieselol.
Yeah. I've used that in the past, and I really don't, I just don't like adding that kind of stuff after the fact. And, I'm more inclined to just let it sit and clear naturally. I'll only use that stuff if it just, won't clear at all. And, even the wines that I make, I don't care to use that. I let it sit in a carboy for months on end until the glass is, fairly clear when I get a drink out. So, but anything else there, maybe, Jeff? Oh, go ahead.
That was probably all I saw. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just saying, speaking of Ryan's shellfish allergies, I just wonder how the chitosan and Kieselol sits well with him or not, because it's a shellfish derivative.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've never used it before. Now, I've also heard that the level at which those chemicals are pulverized eliminates any protein that would still be in it. The example that I give also is that I think up until maybe this year, or maybe they're still doing it, Guinness beer used, a shellfish derivative as their clearing agent. So I've had Guinness, countless times, and I've never had any reaction to the Guinness. Again, I've never personally used it, but, from what I've heard, it's been broken down to such a degree that there's none of that, and take protein or whatever in it anymore that would trigger an allergic reaction.
Yeah.
That's good to know, because that's sort of my go-to binding agent if I have to use it.
Yeah, I've never seen a warning on the side of a Guinness can that said, if you're allergic to shellfish.
Yeah.
Yeah, and dude, I mean, I feel sorry for you, man. I really do. Crab salad, crab legs, lobster. I can go on and on and on, but I just, I don't want you to feel bad.
No, it's all right.
Hey, the what are we drinking? Let me tell you, I've had so much alcohol today. I've had two meads, courtesy of Aaron, today, thinking, we'll just, pick one out, and each one of us will just, because we're going to talk about that tonight. So just grab one and do it. And, of course, the email started going around. Let's do Crystal. Oh, God. Okay. I started out with Calypso. So I've got two meads, two beers. And I'm drinking an apple cider that I bottled here a few days ago. This is a cider. It's just straight up Mott's apple juice, just straight up, nothing added, just Mott's apple juice fermented with Nottingham ale yeast, no sugar added, no honey added, no nothing. When I hit the secondary, I dropped, now this is a 3-gallon batch, I dropped 3 cinnamon sticks in it. And then we had that discussion on cinnamon. And after that, I'm thinking, oh, crap. I hope I didn't put too much in. This thing is perfect. It came out, it's not cinnamony. It's got, you get a little bit of a cinnamon bite to it. It's nice and tart. It's refreshing. It's beer-like. Not quite a Magners, Chris, but I'll tell you, I'm very pleased with this. And it's just, like I said, just simply apple juice, period. Aaron, what's in your glass tonight?
Well, I think... In honor of our hopped meat experiment tasting tonight, I'm actually just about to pour myself a glass. This is actually my last bottle of the Crystal Hop Mead. So we'll be excited to pour a glass of that and see what you guys' thoughts are on it.
Yeah, Aaron sent around he sent us each a little box full of mead, three meads. And this is an experiment. This is a hop experiment that he did. We're going to be talking about this here shortly. And then, of course, he emailed us some forms that we had to fill out. So kind of anxious to get to that discussion here in a little bit, too. Jeff, what are you drinking tonight, bud?
Well, for the moment, I have cracked into the crystal hopped mead that Aaron sent us. Get a good taste off that. And, you know, if I decide that I haven't had quite enough to drink, I've also got a beer from our local brewery, Boulevard, their tasting room series. It's a rosemary IPA.
Rosemary.
Rosemary. So that sounded interesting, something I ought to check out. So,
Wow. Well,
we'll see if I get to that.
Yeah, I want to hear about that one. I mean, I love rosemary. I love cooking with rosemary. Be anxious to hear about that one.
She sounds like a great girl.
Yeah. Hey, Mississippi, it's either Starbucks, or if you've had the kind of day I think you've had, that might be some kind of an alcoholic beverage. What is it?
Well, I boycotted Starbucks. You know that. So it's not
there you
Starbucks.
Go. Yeah, that's true.
I'm sitting by waiting to do the tasting notes on Aaron's crystal.
Cool. All right. Ryan, what'd you pour, man?
Well, this is the first time all day that I've had a chance to have a drink. So I'm drinking the crystal so that I can, I'm filling out my note sheet here as we speak.
Cool. Everybody's drinking crystal. I drank the crystal earlier, right after I drank the Calypso. So I've got more alcohol floating around in my body right now. I don't, you know, just this apple cider. Luckily, it's only about 6%. So that's all I need. Last week we got into this thing. We were talking about themed meads. I got this harebrained idea that we'd ought to put something together for, you know, some kind of a holiday thing or some kind of a theme, whether it's July 4th, Halloween, that kind of thing. And, you know, the one that sticks out in my mind that I'm really eager to talk more about, and I'm hoping one of you came up with a bona fide recipe that looks like it might work, is this licorice thing for Halloween. I just think that's awesome. But I thought we'd spend a little bit of time today and see if we can't, you know, nail down a recipe. And I know I kind of asked Chris and Aaron to kind of take this one on with a little bit of input from Jeff, but I know Chris has been busy all week. But Aaron, were you able to come up with anything at all or put any ideas down other than what we talked about last week?
You know, I have, and I will tell you, I don't know that it's a finished product yet, but after our discussion last week about the watermelon mead, which, you know, I was kind of thinking would be a nice summery 4th of July type of a mead, we got a comment on the Facebook account from Scott Monroe, one of our longtime regular listeners, with a couple of watermelon wine recipes. And just kind of reading through those, I've adapted more like the second one that he shared with us to what I'm calling more of like a 4th of July watermelon mellow piment. So it's watermelon juice and some white grape juice concentrate that I'm going to alter his recipe a little bit that he shared with us with some honey. And again, I'm not quite sure I've settled on the right ratios or amounts of the different ingredients, but there's also a special ingredient that goes in there too that I think might intensify the hop or the watermelon flavor a little bit too. So definitely excited to share some thoughts on that.
Didn't I see somewhere, I don't remember if I saw it in an email, but something watermelon came through, and maybe it was that, I don't remember, but something that it was a watermelon concentrate. Where did I see that, guys? Or maybe you guys didn't see it.
Might have been this. Let me maybe walk through a little bit of this watermelon thing that I've got at least the kind of the structure of here, and maybe we can flesh it out a little bit. So I'm thinking of like a 5-gallon batch, and in one of these recipes that Scott shared with us, it actually calls for this Tropicana watermelon juice. And I was doing a little bit of research on this, and it looks like it, you know, there's no preservatives or artificial sweeteners or flavors. It looks like it really is just, you know, some sugar, watermelon juice, maybe some apple juice in there as well. And they come in these 59 fluid ounce containers. And for this batch that Scott shared, he, I think, had specified, or this recipe called out for 8 of these 59 fluid ounce containers. I think he's also has this recipe mixing in 2 cans of frozen 100% white grape juice concentrate. And this is where I'm going to divert a little bit from his recipe. So I think from there, he's suggesting that we add just sugar. I'm thinking let's substitute the sugar for honey to make it more of like a melomel piment type of a drink. So with those ingredients, the Tropicana watermelon juice, the white grape juice concentrate, and the honey, in some ratio, I want to try to get that up to about a starting gravity of 1.12. And I'm thinking with all of that, you might only need maybe 3 gallons of water once you've got all of the other ingredients mixed up in there.
Yeah.
I think, I don't know if he was suggesting sugar. I think what it was that he found a recipe for the wine, and he was just suggesting that this is a starting point for a mead. So, I believe I saw somewhere it was written that he pulled it off maybe Jack Keller's website or something for a wine. So that's probably why it had the sugar in it.
Yeah, I think so. I've seen that website. He's got all kinds of, I guess they call them country wines and stuff, fruit wines and that kind of thing on there.
Okay.
I just had a wild – I was thinking back to my childhood. We used to get these hard candies called Jolly Ranchers, and I love the watermelon. You can still make them. I wonder if that would impart any watermelon flavor.
You know, it's funny you bring that up. That, I think, is the secret ingredient that I had alluded to. So the recipe that he shared with us actually calls for over 50 of those watermelon Jolly Ranchers melted into a pint of water, mix it in secondary, and I've got to think that's going to intensify that watermelon flavor for sure.
I mean, hell, we're dropping all kinds of other crap into secondary. Why not some Jolly Ranchers?
Exactly.
Based on my previous experience with watermelon, I am not opposed to the Jolly Ranchers at all.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that might be a good way to go, because the watermelon juice itself is not getting the job done.
No, although, and this may be my own preference, but I've never really particularly thought that the watermelon Jolly Rancher tastes right when it comes to a watermelon flavor. It kind of tastes like that the bad fast food strawberry shake, where you see what they're trying to do, but it's not getting there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the watermelon by itself is even worse. how can a piece of natural watermelon be such a bad representation of watermelon? But it is in a mead. So,
well, I did see, gosh, I can't remember where the hell I saw it now. I saw some reference to a watermelon concentrate, like a big jug. It was like a quart jug. And it looked like you dilute the stuff down and make like a fruit punch, only it was watermelon flavor. And I don't recall where I saw it. And, I've tried to skim through our Facebook page to see if that's where I saw it. It may have been, I don't know, if somebody's got the Facebook up and can get to it. The way my monitors are configured here, I got to look way away from the screen to the other side of the desk here to look at the other screen. So, but I'm sure I saw that somewhere. So I think you're on the right track, Aaron.
Does Kool-Aid make a watermelon flavor?
I don't know.
I will check on that here. Pull it up the old Google.
That might be an option also.
Where was that, Chris? You were using a company online. You were buying your concentrate for was it the Heart Murmur?
Yeah, the Brownwood Acre Farms.
Yeah, is that it? Yeah, I wonder if they have. Yeah,
they don't have watermelon. No.
Oh, okay.
Now, they've got a lot though. They've got a lot of different concentrates, and people who are looking to make a anywhere from 3 to 6 gallon batch, you really need to check their website out. They've got blueberry and raspberry, tart cherry. Gosh, I can't remember. They got several different ones, and their concentrates are very high quality.
Yeah. I like this. I like this watermelon idea, Aaron. Let's try to pursue this further. I like the recipe you got going here. You know, I mean, if you can make a wine, you know, Scott found those wine recipes. I mean, I don't see any reason why you can't substitute the sugar for the honey. I mean, what the hell's the difference here? You know,
that's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, so I think this, you know, we'll call this our 4th of July mead. Let's kind of nail this down. Shoot me an email with your notes, and we'll put it up on the website. See if we can't entice somebody to put it together, and give us a call. Let us know how it worked out for you. I may be able to do. I've got some 1 gallon stuff sitting right here that I can do a small 1 gallon. All my 5 gallon stuff is full, but that sounds good. Anything else, guys? On holiday, I know we talked about this blackberry, blackcurrant, Halloween thing, but I also like this licorice idea. How would we work licorice? What else do you pair licorice with? Or did we get that far?
As far as getting the licorice, you've got a couple of options. You've got licorice root, you've got star anise, and let's see, what else have we got here?
Yeah, star anise. I see that used frequently, or well, not frequently, but I see it used in meads on occasion. So that might be an idea. But what would you put it with something else, or just do a straight up licorice mead?
You know, I would have to go back and read the book, read the description in the book, because I pull that from the idea of the Harry Potter series. So,
really, you're not publicly divulging the fact that you read Harry Potter books?
I didn't read it. I watched the movies, but my wife and daughter read it.
Okay. We didn't read the book, but he watched the movies.
Yeah, I don't have time to read the book. I would rather watch the movie.
Yeah, Yeah, you read medical journals. Yeah, I like this licorice idea for Halloween. I'd like to push that a little further. What kind of pair up the anise with?
You mean, what did you say, what kind of honey? You kind of checked out there for a second.
Yeah, what kind of honey? Yeah, I'm always checking out, dude. What kind of honey would you pair anise with?
Blackberry blossom.
Okay.
Maybe a small amount of buckwheat. Maybe a small amount, or maybe a third of a really dark wildflower, if it was a real bold wildflower.
Yeah.
I can see black locust honey or acacia honey. Either one would work good. Something with some definite backbone to it.
Yeah. Are there, I mean, off the top of your head, without referring back to the Harry Potter thing, I mean, maybe Jeff and the boys can chime in here. What other flavors, guys, would you put up with the anise? Knowing, I know the anise is that's a pretty potent, you know, flavor all by itself. So
it is, and I would have trouble thinking of something that wouldn't kind of get lost against it. You know, when I think of the licorice flavors, there are really few that, to my mind, like stand up to it or really complement it well. So I think I would have to go back to the drawing board and do some thinking about that myself, really.
Yeah,
I think same maybe here. The only thing in my mind that would go would be something toward a root beer, something like a sarsaparilla. Kind of a licorice sarsaparilla, maybe with a little vanilla and secondary or something. I've always thought that vanilla would smooth the edges on licorice, because I always saw licorice as having this sort of a bitter, rough edge to it that didn't appeal to me. So
yeah,
I don't know. I'm thinking that maybe the vanilla might take that edge off. I don't know. It might clash with it entirely, but.
And to be honest, I think that's part of the reason why things like star anise or fennel that are similar to that black licorice, but not quite, are more popular in this usage than the actual like licorice root, just because there's it's a little bit more forgiving and a little bit like less harsh on the palate than the licorice root itself, even though it's a similar flavor profile.
Yeah, you mm-hmm. mentioned fennel last week, Jeff. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that might be an idea.
I could see going the complete opposite end of the wheel, and I could see trying to juxtaposition it with like a sweet cherry.
Yeah?
Yeah,
that's a really interesting idea.
Mm-hmm. Licorice and sweet cherry.
Yeah.
Interesting. Using like a cherry juice.
Yeah, I mean that's what I would do. I would get the maybe a jug of the Knutson sweet cherry, or or some other kind of sweet cherry, and try that and see how that plays against that.
Don't go the sweet licorice. Cherry route. Do the tart cherry and get your sweetness from the honey. I think we've talked about this before. You're gonna get cough syrup if you use sweet cherry.
Yeah, the Robitussin. Yeah.
Yes. But big time.
Part of me wonders if the strength of the star anise wouldn't kind of counteract that cough syrup. I mean. The star anise or the licorice, you might end up with something totally undrinkable, or the two might kind of balance each other out.
See, get nervous when I think about putting licorice into a drink, because I don't know if you guys are old enough to remember Geritol. You remember the liquid Geritol?
Oh, yeah.
I know JD does.
Oh, yeah.
And to me, that always had a licorice taste to it. And there's a fine line there, but that I would not want to cross over. So if I was going to do a licorice drink, I would have to – I'm thinking a hint of licorice, not something real bold.
Yeah. Well, I know I've seen mead recipes out there where people have dropped an Anistar or two into them. The one that comes to mind is the fabled J, the ancient orange mead. You read of, about all the different kinds of things that people have added to this particular one. Star anise is one thing that I recall people using, but off the top of my head, I can't think of any other recipes where people have used it, but I know it's been done.
Prairie Rose Meadery, I think it's out of South Dakota. I could be wrong on the location, but they do a star anise flavored mead. Just that's the only flavor that's the star flavor of the whole brew. I've not had an opportunity to try it. But yeah.
I was going to say, I think that's Susan Rudd, if I'm not mistaken. And I think she's out of Fargo.
Yes,
and I think
she's
out of Fargo. Yeah, that's you're close. You're at least in the Dakotas. It's just North Dakota.
Yeah. Well, I was.
Yeah, home. I recall Susan. She was a guest on the Got Mead show a few years ago. Might be worth contacting her and getting some ideas. See if she can shed any light on this. And any other ideas for these holiday or themed meads? We've kind of got this watermelon thing for 4th of July, summertime. We got this licorice thing going on for a Halloween thing. Should we be thinking about, we're talking about fermenting time versus aging time as well here. So, the next set of holidays, logically, are going to be like Thanksgiving.
Yeah, Jeff sent out an email with this trickster Tom. I guess it's okay to make that public, Jeff. That's okay with you if we talk about it?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a little bit rough, but that was my concept for the blackberry blackcurrant mead with the
Well,
Chipotle
I like added. I like what I'm seeing here. I would make two suggestions. You've got six of the peppers in here in secondary.
Yep.
I would go with three on that because I did try a cherry chipotle, and I did a 5-gallon with three, and it was just right. The problem is not with the heat. The problem is with the smoke. You will overpower it with smoke flavor with six peppers.
Good to know. I hadn't considered the smoke flavor. How long did you have it on the three?
I think I went for about 3 days and tasted it, and it was about where I wanted it, and I pulled them out.
Okay.
But definitely go with three, not six. And like I said, it's not the heat, it's the smoke. The smoke will totally overpower everything. And the other thing that I might suggest on this really sounds like a good recipe, but what I might do, since we're going to end up so much on the dry side, I think you've got a estimation of 10-10 for a final gravity. And blackberries and currants both can be, they're very acidic, and the blackberries especially are going to bring an earthy acidity to it. Mm-hmm. I might actually go, once this thing is finished fermentation and I get it and get the berries, before I put the peppers in, I might consider putting this thing through a malolactic fermentation to kind of soften that acidity.
That could be interesting.
I would also have thought about
Just maybe bumping that starting gravity by another 10-15 points so it finishes a little higher. It did occur to me that we're going to be dealing with some tannic and some acid issues that might make the dryness a little bit unpalatable. I usually tend to prefer things on the drier side, but in this case, one way or another, we might want to take some action to deal with that.
Remember your perception here. This thing could finish at 10:30, and it's still not going to seem sweet to you. It's still going to it's going to be dry. So, yeah. But if you did finish at 10:10, you could pull that off. I think you could put it through a malolactic fermentation and pull that off.
Well, I've never tried the malolactic. It'd be an interesting thing to do, if only for the experience of doing it.
For the benefit of listeners who've never heard of that either, what is that, Chris?
Well, it's just a bacteria culture that's added after primary, and it'll soften some of the acidity. It'll change the malic acid into lactic acid, which is a smoother and milder acid.
Sometimes I have a thing with blackberries too. There's some berries out there that they're just not sweet. Especially when you get them out of the store, because they're always picked too damn early anyway, but they're not sweet until you put something sweet with it, like sugar or honey. Blackberries is one of them. Raspberries is another one. Raspberries by themselves taste like crap, but if you put sugar with the raspberries, it tastes awesome. So what if you use like a blackberry juice or blackberry puree? Would you accomplish the same flavor profile, you think, or how would that work?
Well, and you're really my freeze and thaw cycle process when I'm working with fruit, at least the few millimills I've done this year. I've tried the Lelozyme that Chris recommended with my pumpkin thing, and that kind of put me off of it for a while. But I've had pretty good results with just freezing and thawing a few times to really break down those cell walls. You smush them up a little bit with your hands when it's all said and done, and you get a pretty, not quite pureed, but pretty well, like, smooshed up result from that. I don't know if I'd want to use a commercial puree, just because I worried that the mechanical process of pureeing those would expose or, like, potentially crack the seeds, which would introduce a lot more tannin.
Don't they filter the seeds out, I wonder?
You got to wonder at what point they do that, though.
Yeah, that's true.
That's before they smush things up, or as they're smushing things up. I have no idea. I don't know how that mechanical process works. The juice is kind of along the same lines, although I did honestly think about just throwing in a can of the Vintner's Harvest, like 96-ounce blackberry juice, calling it good. And I still might. I don't know if I want to go to Target and buy a 9-12 1-pound bags of frozen blackberries to make this happen.
Yeah.
I've done it many times.
I don't want to buy a 96-ounce can of blackberry puree just to take a taste of it and see if I want to use it either.
That's a tricky situation too.
I like this. I dig this recipe, man.
And the other thing I'm worried about is just the black currant, that tartness from that kind of overpowering everything else. So I'm a little bit wary as to whether I want to use like a quart of the juice or a pint of the juice. I may just start with the pint in primary and decide if I need a second pint when it gets to secondary, based on how it's doing then.
I think you'll be okay with a quart in 6 gallons. And I'm basing that entirely on my heart murmur recipe.
Okay.
I think a quart in six. Now, if you were doing less than 6 gallons, I would probably back down. But I think you'll be okay in 6 gallons there.
Your Chipotle, I wonder, you're talking about smoking these to turn them into Chipotles. I wonder if you use, what's that other chili? Oh, God. Come on, guys. They come dry. They're red. They're big. You rehydrate them. Always typically used in sauces. You put them in a blender, grind them up, add garlic, onions, spices, and whatnot. Come on. What are those chilies called? Oh, God dang.
They're real big.
Yeah, they're real big. They're dried.
Ancho chilies.
Yeah, ancho chilies. I wonder chilies. Would you accomplish the same thing? Because they've got a smoky flavor. Of course, I mean, you'd have to kind of guess at how many you'd need because you have to rehydrate them.
Yeah.
But I wonder if that's the same. Are you looking for the heat?
I'm looking for a little bit of the heat, a little bit of the smoky flavor. The concept of the mouthfeel or the experience of drinking this, I want that fruit flavor to be very like on the nose and across the tongue when you're first drinking it. And my concept of that heat and the smoky flavor is that's going to hit you on the aftertaste or as you're kind of swallowing it. It's kind of be that last little punch that says, hey. That's not all pleasant. There's a little bit of burn there too.
So if you
remember our conversation about oxidative and reductive fermentations.
Yeah.
Take this thing if you're going to put this together and do an open fermentation for like the first, I don't know, maybe 5 days or so, or mm-hmm. up until the point where you do your final degassing and then airlock it, and that'll help bring some of that fruit up on the nose like you're wanting.
Well, I'll take that advice, sure.
I want to go back to these the chili peppers here for a minute. What, you know, not everybody's going to be able to cold smoke these jalapenos now.
Yeah, no.
I always I make my chipotles on my gas stove. I've got one of these only seen on TV metal steamer basket things. And I open it up, I just put it right on the burner and crank the burner all the way up, and I lay my chilies out on that. I wonder if you can do the same thing. Just roast your chilies, leave the skin on. To get that smoky flavor, and use them that way rather than trying to go through this whole thing about cold smoking, a rack of chili, jalapeno.
Well, and that's not far off from one approach I was considering, depending on, whether or not I can get somebody with a true dedicated smoker to give me a hand with this. Cause I have a fairly large just gas grill in my backyard. And it occurred to me if I take like a quarter size little pan, throw some wet wood chips of the appropriate variety on one far side and, line out my chilies on the other side.
It wouldn't be
a cold smoke, but it would be a fairly,
all you need is a cake pan, a cake rack and some foil. You put your wood chips on the bottom of the pan, put the cake rack on top with your chilies, and then put the foil over the top and set that on top of your burner. It's sure. the same thing they do in restaurants.
If you've ever cooked meat in that grill, don't do it. I'm telling you.
Well, that's
you
true.
Remember
yeah.
what I told you? Remember yeah. what I told you that happened to me? I tried to make those in my barbecue smoker, and they had a layer of grease on them.
Yeah.
And I didn't have the heat cranked up at all, but the grease and the oil will vaporize and they will, over the course of, the 12 or 14 hours that it takes to dry those things out, they will be completely soggy with grease. So
yeah.
that rules out anything that's had meat cooked in it. It won't work.
Damn, that kind of rules out most everybody I know with a smoker, because there is no way I know anybody with a virgin smoker around here. So well, maybe like we'll go back to Boy Scouts for that.
Well, like I say, you don't need a big fancy smoker. You can do it in your kitchen. Just turn the fire alarms off. Because this is the way they do this in restaurants. And although they use a specific pan made for doing this, but you just simply take a cake pan, and if you've got a cake rack, like a cooling rack, cookie rack or whatever, that'll fit inside the cake pan. You put your wood chips, your wet chips on the bottom, prop that cookie rack up a little bit off the wood chips, put your chilies on that and cover it with foil and put it on top of the stove. And, when it starts smoking, you got it. So, you don't have to use, a nice big fancy, backyard smoker, but be advised, it's going to fill your house with smoke.
You know what, though? On the topic of backyard smokers, I don't have a smoker. I do have a turkey fryer. And while I'm sure that's been used to heat up a vessel which contained meat, I think the burner itself is clear of any kind of grease or debris. So I might just toss it on that burner and let it go to town that way.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or if you can get a metal container, something that's not galvanized. Most trash cans are galvanized, but if you could find one that's not, you could put that on the burner and smoke in that. Cover it with some tin foil.
Yeah.
We'll have to play around with that a little bit, see what I come up with.
The Boy Scout in you should come up with something there.
Yeah, there's enough Boy Scout and just, backyard drunken innovation and boredom that I can come up with something. I'm definitely sure.
Yeah. Yeah. See, okay. I ruined about 3 pounds of jalapenos on my smoker by doing that. And so I learned the hard way.
Yeah, I'll learn from your mistake there.
Yeah. So I'm going to put and Aaron, if you want to send me your little concoction for the watermelon, and Chris, if you got some time and can put something together, even just if it's just a 3 gallon thing for this licorice thing, and then Jeff, I'm going to put these all up on the website, but let people know that hey, these recipes. These are totally experimental. Here you go. Here's this recipe you can try out. If you do it, please give us a call, shoot us an email or whatever, and let us know if you came up with anything different, if you had any success, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, and if you guys have had ideas we haven't thought of, let us know. I mean, we're always open to more input, too.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, and like I said at the top of the show, since we're not going to be doing the live show anymore, we're going to focus on the podcast part of it. You can still call the show because our recording schedule has not changed. We're still on the 6 and 2. We're still live, doing live recording at 9 p.m. Eastern time. So give us a call and let us know. The number is I'll repost the number because I changed the header on the website. But let's move on, guys. I know Chris has had a hell of a week. He was going to come up with a list of descriptors with Jeff's input. I know Jeff, you said at the top of the show here that you had some information on, or no, I guess that was the toxic stuff.
Yeah, that was toxic.
Yeah, and you were going to provide a little bit of input with Chris on these descriptors. I kind of wanted to touch on that a little bit, if we could, maybe based on your experience as a mead judge, coming from that perspective. I wanted to kind of touch on that before we got into Aaron's hop evaluation. So, sure. Can you tell us what kind of a list or words or things that we should be thinking about as far as descriptors?
Okay, well,
me or Jeff? Okay.
Well, either one of you. I know, Chris, you said that you had a pretty busy week and weren't really able to do a whole lot of stuff, or did you have a list?
I had this list ready for last week, but Jeff, go ahead with what you've got, and I'll throw in what I've got afterwards.
You know, we may be better off going the other way around, because I don't have a lot. I will say, you know, there are a number of common faults that, you know, you share between anything fermented, whether it's a wine or a mead, beer, cider, anything that Saccharomyces has had a hand in has the potential to get these faults. The biggest ones are things like a bacterial infection, and that can take a number of different forms. You can get a skunky smell off of that. You can get a kind of there are a number of different ways that manifests. But a large number of the faults are also from essentially a stress fermentation. One of the most common ones that I know of is, it's kind of that movie theater buttery, popcorn taste. And the name escapes me at the moment, from what causes that, but that's a stressed yeast, byproduct essentially. Another one is kind of the acetaldehyde, which is that really the kind of the sour green apple taste. So yeah, beyond that, the other things you want to think about are just essentially the flavors and the aromas that you would expect to sample in a mead. I mean, you want to look for the
dimethyl sulfide.
Yeah. Dimethyl sulfide is, well,
suicide. What did you say?
Did you?
Yeah, I caught it. What did you say? Something suicide.
I caught it after the fact. Yeah. Well, we were talking back and forth on something entirely different a couple weeks back, and I mentioned that, you know, stuff that can be a fault in some recipes, in some categories, is actually like really true to style. My example was that, you know, if you read the BJCP descriptor for a Czech Pilsner, the dimethyl sulfide, which is kind of it's like a cooked corn or a cream corn flavor.
Well, I like cream corn.
That's actually considered a fault, according to the BJCP. But if you drink a Czech Pilsner in the Czech Republic that's actually made there and has been made there for, you know, 4 or 5 centuries, a little bit of DMS, the dimethyl sulfide, that's not only okay, it's kind of like expected. It feels weird if it's not there. And, you know, my texting on my phone or my emailing on my phone, for whatever reason, swipe corrected my sulfide to suicide. So.
Oh, that's where that came from.
Yep, that was that. So anyway, yeah.
That's how the whole discussion about what the cults drank when they went to meet the aliens on the comet or whatever.
Yeah. I remember that. Okay. So what kind of a list did you have together there, Chris?
Well, I wasn't really focusing on faults. I was just looking for descriptor words for people who are wanting to, like what we're going to do with Aaron's mead tonight. We were going to sort of evaluate it. And so, you know, some words that are common descriptors of what you might be tasting. And these apply to aroma and flavor also. But, you know, things like an earthy, and in the earthy category, you've got dirt, you've got green grass, you've got hay, barnyard, all those kinds of words like that. Then you got in what I would say the fruit category, you can smell or taste a jammy type flavor, fruity, dark fruit, stone fruit, citrus fruit, tropical fruit. And then you've got other things like tobacco and, you know, I hear a lot of things that have stone, dark stone fruit in them can be described as having a tobacco aroma to them. You've also got things like malty and all your common spices that you put in, whether it's some people will just say it smells peppery, it smells spicy, even the alcohol has a, sometimes is described as being somewhat of a spicy flavor, boozy. All of these words are things that describe mostly melomels, I think, in general, but they could apply to anything. Chocolatey.
Somebody's yawning.
Yeah, Ryan's bored.
Ryan, are you awake, Ryan?
That had nothing to do with you, Chris.
Yeah.
Sorry, I thought I was on mute.
I actually have my Bob Ross t-shirt on, and he does the same thing to me.
So, all right. You know, when I was tasting, you know, where I first picked up on a lot of these descriptors, I'm listening to Liquor Hound. If you go to YouTube, if you anything you ever wanted to know about liquor, go to YouTube. Hound. He does some amazing reviews on virtually all, just every spirit known to man. And I paid particular attention to his bourbons, and he starts talking about the very things you're talking about, Chris, like leather, tobacco, of course, the oaks, and there's a whole different spread on oaks, too. There's the light mm-hmm. oaks, American oaks, French oaks. They all impart different aromas and flavors, you know, vanilla, orange peel, all different kinds of descriptors. And I started tasting my bourbon and started looking for those. And it's funny because I never considered leather, tobacco, as any kind of a description in how I tasted my bourbon until I saw this guy talking about it. And they start popping into your mind. You know, as I taste these different bourbons that I have, I can pick these aromas and these flavors out. It's pretty amazing. So,
yeah, I'm not real good at picking out some of the more subtle things because my palate's just not sensitive enough. But, you know, there are certain things that pop out to me. One of the things was green apple when it comes to tasting honey. I always knew that honey had this certain, or at least some honeys have this certain tang, and it's mostly like going down your throat. It's got a tang on the back end, and I never really knew how to describe it until I heard someone talking about this green apple character. And think about that the next time you have sort of a tangy, tart honey. It really is like a Granny Smith apple.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, and, you know, along that line, we as a society don't think about honey as being acidic or having an acid content to it because it's so sweet. But you know, once, you know, you fermented that out and you're leaving just the non-sugar stuff behind, there's definitely acid components to honey. And, you know, you really only see that when you're fermenting out the sweetness.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So true.
And, you know, some are more than others, like the basswood.
Absolutely.
Yeah, basswood is loaded with acid.
That's where that's coming from. Okay. That makes that right there makes sense because that part of our next discussion I didn't know, but it makes all the sense in the world now. Let's why don't we just go ahead and if you haven't popped the tops on your, let's see, what are we doing? Crystal, right?
Crystal.
Oh, Alexa, I wasn't talking to you. Okay, so Aaron, why don't you explain what you did here?
Absolutely. So for those listeners that have been listening for a while, you guys know I'm a huge hophead. I love IPAs and, you know, really strongly hopped beers. And I wanted to do an experiment that would allow me to just get more familiar and better understand some of the different hop varieties that are out there, particularly used in like a dry, lighter bodied, lighter alcohol, more of like a session strength mead. So this is an experiment I put together last summer, which was to compare three uniquely different hop varieties that, you know, in doing some research on these had three different types of flavor profiles. I don't want to maybe tell you guys which one this crystal one is, or you may already know, but just for the sake of setting up the experiment, one of the hops was described as being more of like piney, resiny. The other one was more citrusy and fruity. And the last one was described as being more of a floral, spicy type of a flavor. And in terms of the recipes here, these were each 3 1-gallon batches. And actually, I have to credit Jeff for contributing significantly and really, you know, guiding me through the process here. So the procedure that I used, you know, largely comes from Jeff. What he had recommended is for each of these batches, I boiled 1/4 of water and added, I think in total, 1/2 ounce of these 3 different hops. I boiled them for, I think, 30 minutes total, but I did kind of like a staggered addition throughout the boil. So 1/4 of the ounces boiled for the full 30 minutes, an eighth ounce of the hops boiled for the final 10 minutes. And then at the very end for the last 2 minutes, I added another 1/8 ounce of hops, kind of mirroring that after, you know, your hop additions during the beer brewing process where you get, you know, the flavoring, the bitter, is it the bittering, the flavoring and the aroma hops.
Right. Yeah.
So from there, I mixed in enough basswood honey to raise the starting gravity up to 1.078. This was 19 bricks using my refractometer. And in my notes I had recorded that was just about 2 pounds per gallon. And because, you know, I'm using hops, which was more of a beer ingredient, I wanted to go for more of a beer profile in these, so I elected to use an ale yeast, the Cefal US05. Then from there, you know, I really just followed kind of my standard protocol, rehydrating that yeast with the Go Firm Energy, using the Firm 8O and the Tasna nutrient schedule. Looking at my notes, I don't have an exact brew date on these, but I think it was sometime around May of 2016. And these went into the bottle in December of 2016, so about 3 months or so ago. They are bottle conditioned, although I'm on this first crystal one, I think for one reason or another, this one didn't fully carb up quite like the other ones did, but that's just a little bit of the background on this experiment here. Again, just to kind of compare these three different hops, and kind of the objective for me was to kind of better understand the different flavors you can get from different hops and see if there's one type of hop that kind of played better in the mead versus the others.
And you sent out a you emailed us this score sheet, just for each one. the Crystal, the Chinook, and the Calypso. And first up tonight, we all agreed, was going to be the Crystal. I'll go ahead and start this off. Now, I filled out this sheet today when I was tasting your mead. And the first box is appearance, comment on color, clarity, legs, and carbonation. It was clear. It was a little bit foggy, but it was nice and clear. I really don't care about the clarity. I'm kind of over that. I used to think that, you know, gosh, it needs to be absolutely crystal clear. But I'm kind of past that. Good carbonation. I don't typically look at wines or beers or anything with, you know, that with the leg thing. I call it smear. if it smears the glass really good, then, you know, I guess that means something. But I know it's not going to be real watery. So it had a nice smear. The bouquet and aroma, you wanted to know about the honey expression, the alcohol, hop aroma, esters, so on and so forth. What I got from this from the Crystal was a very light honey aroma from this one. I got kind of a lemony aroma as well. I don't know where that's coming from. But definitely got the honey part, but it was very light, a lot lighter than the other one that I had this morning. Oh, did we lose somebody? Oh, we lost Ryan. Let me get Ryan back.
He went to sleep.
You know, JD, while you're pulling him back in, just a couple other comments about this score sheet. So this is actually the second revision of this score sheet that I sent around. I sent out a first draft to the group, got some real good feedback. I forget who it was, but someone suggested that, you know, I reference the BJCP mead evaluation form. Mm-hmm. So that's where a lot of the format of this came from, in terms of, you know, comment on the appearance and the bouquet and the aroma and the flavor and overall impression. You know, these are all elements that I kind of borrowed from that BJCP score sheet.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, Ryan, grab something to write with, because I don't have access to mine right now. So I'm going to give you my
evaluation. Do you want me to take the notes? This one.
I'll grab them. I'm going to be consolidating it. Anyway,
so did I say Ryan? I meant Aaron.
Aaron, yeah. In the also in the bouquet, I didn't get a whole lot of hop aroma out of the Crystal. It was the aroma I did get was very slight, very light. There's the flavor box. Now here you wanted to comment on the honey, the hop character, the sweetness, acidity, tannin, so on and so forth, balance, body, carbonation, aftertaste. I got that box pretty well filled in. I wrote down floral. I wrote down light hint of black pepper. I also wrote down carbonated Sauvignon Blanc. White wine grape. I wrote down nice body, tannin with a question mark, maybe very light tannin is what I got. I wrote down a lingering pepper aftertaste, very slight black pepper type, and then a citrus acid. And Chris's comment about the basswood being a rather acidic honey, or maybe it was Jeff, perhaps that's where that's coming from. And then I also on the margin I wrote down perceived sweetness, because I really didn't get any sweetness, but there's something there that told my mind that About the middle, there was something sweet that I was tasting. And the overall impression, I thought it was a bit bland for my taste. Now, that's purely my own taste. Not a whole lot of flavor that I would have liked. But it did have a good body, nice mouthfeel, dry, and again, this perceived sweetness almost on the finish, even from the middle to about the finish. And the rank, right now I've got it number two because I already have a number one out of the two that I tried today. So those are my notes. And then the check, or I don't know if this is a checkbox or what, over on the right, you've got descriptors. I marked down floral. I put a check mark in grapefruit and in black pepper. And those are my notes.
That's awesome. Okay. Well, thanks, JD. That's interesting. I'm just fascinated to hear your thoughts on this.
So, Aaron, I've got this right here ready to go if you want to take this down. I'm not going
ready
to,
go?
To rank it because this is my first one. So, appearance, yeah, it's a little bit cloudy, which doesn't matter at all. Very light carbonation, no head, no legs. The aroma, lots of grapefruit, big time grapefruit. It's been warming up just a little bit here, and as it warms up, there's a lot of honey coming through. Not much when it's cold, but to be such a light beverage, there's a lot of honey coming through, and it almost has, if you inhale really, really deeply, there is almost a vanilla character in the nose. And slight medicinal aroma. Flavor. Starts out big time grapefruit again. Maybe like some orange peel in there. Very citrusy all around. I'm not sure if that's coming from the hops or the basswood honey, though. I'm not really picking up hop so much as I am honey. Slight medicinal taste. Maybe some. I got to agree with JD. There's a little bit of a sort of a Chardonnay white grape in there. Maybe a tiny bit of floral in the background, but it's very slight. Light bodied. It's actually got a little bit more mouthfeel and body to it than you would think as it's like on the mid palate.
Which that's where I think JD also was noticing some of that perceived sweetness. So it's interesting kind of what's going on there in the middle.
Yeah, and I know this is bone dry, but it doesn't come off as being just searingly dry. It's not the kind of thing that would really leave your palate feeling dry. Overall impression, I would say this is definitely what I would consider a very citrusy kind of mead. Maybe it's just a tad bit medicinal, which may be from it may be from the honey, it may be from the hops, it may be from I don't think it's from the alcohol because I don't really pick up on the alcohol that much. If that's coming from alcohol, I would say it's a spiciness. Maybe JD mentioned black pepper. I get more of a white pepper kind of note from it. So overall, it's a good session mead. Only thing that I would like probably is a little bit more carbonation.
Excellent. That's awesome. I'm just really enjoying listening to you guys' thoughts on this. So thanks for the feedback, and interested to hear Jeff and Ryan's take on this too. Maybe before jumping in there, I think this will make for a really interesting article to put out on the website, and hopefully is equally as interesting to our listeners to be learning about these three different hops.
Well, I think the lesson here is, and this goes back to Chris and Jeff, you know, talking about these description words and this kind of thing, is being able to self-evaluate your mead or beer or whatever. And I think this is a good hands-on opportunity to be able to think about these words, because going back to what I said about the bourbon, I never approached mead like this, ever. Okay? So this is a good lesson. So,
Aaron, I would also add that once you stop drinking it, that grapefruit slowly fades into a perfumey type flavor.
Okay.
So it leaves a little bit of a perfume aftertaste, which is not a bad thing.
I could see that. I could see that for sure.
Who's next? Jeff.
Go ahead. Okay. Go ahead, Jeff.
Sure. Just going down the list here, as far as appearance goes, color is a really light straw. It's a nice, what I would expect out of a dry mead. I did get a little bit of a chill haze when I first poured it, but now that it's warmed up a little bit, it is almost crystal clear. Like JD mentioned, it doesn't have legs. Legs is something you really expect more from a wine instead of a session strength. Then this really sheets off the glass pretty easily. Carbonation level, it sounds like mine is a little less carbonated than you guys. This is what I would call petulant mead, where it's not still. You know, if I disturb the glass, it will kick up some bubbles, but there's not like that shower of bubbles creating a head that you would get from a carbonated beverage. Okay, so as far as the bouquet goes, when I'm smelling it here, I'm getting it's almost a marriage of the honey and the hop aroma. The hop aroma, like the other guys have commented on, it gives it this kind of a perceived sweetness, and I think, if I'm not mistaken, this is going to be the floral hop. I smell honey and I smell something sweet, but I know this is dry, so it can't be exactly the honey by itself. It has to be contributing from the hops, but it's not something I would consider. You know, when I think of hops, I think of an IPA, which is really, really strong or really bitter. It's not that smell at all. I'm not getting a lot of alcohol. I'm not getting a lot of esters, but this is a lower alcohol mead. Those necessarily wouldn't be terribly present here. As far as flavor goes, it's a really nice light flavor. There's some honey expression. There's that sweetness along the middle that comes, I wholeheartedly believe, from the hops itself and their interaction with the honey. And it has a bite at the end that's it's acidic enough that I want to call it almost crisp, but not quite crisp. It's missing the tannin part to maybe really be like a good crisp apple cider, but it's got that acid bite associated with it that it is still really pleasant for the end of the drink. As far as flavors go, what I'm getting more than anything outside of the that slight acidity from the honey is really more of like it's landing on my palate somewhere between like a really light lemon flavor and maybe like a spruce tip flavor. I think what JD and Chris had mentioned as kind of a peppery flavor is kind of that acid bite that I'm getting, because I could see where they're coming from with that. It's registered to me as just, you know, that kind of that acid character from the basswood honey. It's a light bodied mead, but it's supposed to be, and I don't fault you for that at all. I think it's really pleasant. I agree with Chris. I would like it a little bit more carbonated. But as far as an overall impression goes, I mean, I taste this and I think, man, this summer when I'm mowing the lawn, it's hot and I'm sweaty and nasty. I want to have like two of these on ice so that I can sit in the hammock, crack them open, and just finish these off when I'm done. The only room for improvement, I would say, maybe a little bit more expression from the honey and maybe a little bit more expression from the hops. But otherwise, it's a really pleasant drink.
Awesome. Well, and Jeff, just want to thank you as well for your input to the procedure and the recipe. You know, your comments and guidance leading me into this was just a crucial part to it. So definitely appreciate the feedback and your input in crafting this recipe.
I guess that leaves me. Just a couple of questions that I think I might have missed earlier. What was the final gravity on this guy?
So all of these wound up pretty bone dry, between like 0.999 and just 1000.
And what did that put us at for ABV?
Oh gosh. Okay. So let me do some quick math on that. But 19 bricks potential alcohol. I should know this.
Well, that's got to be about 9. Yeah, it's got to be just under 10.
You know, I was comment when Jeff said he would like to have this, a couple of these. I've got a feeling this would hit you pretty hard.
Yeah. So how?
This is saying 10.8. Is that right?
Yeah,
that's about right.
Yeah.
Oh wow, it's almost 11. Okay.
Well, you know, maybe I wouldn't be getting up from that hammock too soon. That might not be a bad thing.
What was your procedure for? The bottle conditioning, or the, I guess adding the priming sugar, right? What did you do to carbonate it?
So basically your usual 5 ounces that would go in a full 5 gallon batch, divided that by 5 for a single gallon. What is it? Usually a pint or so of water that you would boil that in, just divided that by 5 as well. Basically I took the usual procedure I would follow for bottle conditioning a 5 gallon batch of beer and divided by 5.
Okay. Did you bottle it out of your a bottling bucket or your 1 gallon jug, or what did you do there?
Bottling bucket.
Well, one of the first things that stuck out when everyone was talking is that it seems like we all got slightly different versions of the batch. And like Jeff, mine was petulant in that there's just very, very, very light carbonation. And there was absolutely no sediment on the bottom of the bottle that I got. You know, when I bottle conditioned beers and a bottle conditioned meads and made, sparkling wines that I bottle conditioned, you know, I generally, you'll get that layer of tight, you know, or sediment on the bottom. And like Chris was saying, you know, and maybe he was rough with it, or maybe it didn't settle out, but his kind of came out hazy. Mine was brilliantly clear. I mean, it's like you almost ran it through a filter to get it as clear as it was. So I don't know if that's because it wasn't all the priming sugar wasn't mixed in thoroughly to the batch to give all of the entire batch the same, roughly the same amount of priming sugar, but mine was just ever so slightly carbonated, and like I said, it was brilliantly clear. I actually put my color as a light golden, and because it's almost like the way that you'd see a very, very light colored gold that's, you know, brilliantly polished. And I'm going to use that word polished again, because that's how I think of wines that have been put through a filter, is that they're very, very polished. And this one to me looked practically polished, as I poured it into the glass. I also served mine at, between 60 and 65 degrees, because I did want to make sure that I wasn't burying any of the aromas or flavors, in too cool of a temperature. So I served it at just under room temperature, which, you know, really exposes it to everything. I mean, there's not a lot of places to hide when you do it at that temperature. So it's light golden color, brilliantly clear, ever so slight carbonation. That'd be the appearance box. Moving down to the bouquet aroma, there, I said it was very, I got very light, very bright fruit. So one of the things that I do to really, really get a good smell is, you know, I stick my nose deep into the glass and I take a few big breaths, and then I kind of pull back, and then I let it rest for a few minutes. You know, you've got the little bits of aroma on your nasal receptors at that point. And then I go back in and I take a few more whiffs, and you can get some little bit of differences there. I picked up, no different than anybody else, a lot of grapefruit. I picked up a lot of grapefruit. I picked up some very slight peach, and I also picked up a little bit of lemon, maybe even lemon zest is how I would describe it. And then going into the flavor, I got some medium mouthfeel. You know, it wasn't big and rich and felt like it coated your mouth, but it also at the same time wasn't definitely not watery or thin by any means. You know, same type of thing, perceived sweetness, just ever so, it's like you see it and you want to know it's there. We talked about that watermelon Jolly Rancher. That watermelon Jolly Rancher tastes nothing like a watermelon. It's the color of a watermelon. It says watermelon on it, and you convince yourself that that's what watermelon candy tastes like, or what a watermelon should taste like. In the same thing, you know, you see a white wine, it's dry, but you get a little bit of that sweetness that's coming through there. I did get quite a bit of acidity coming from it. And then I definitely picked up that, and I almost call it a residual bitterness when you dry hop, because you've got to leave it. It's got to dry out for quite a long time before it picks up any measurable IBU. But at the same time, you can pick up this bitterness perception from the dry hopping, and that's definitely what I picked up. I thought that going to the overall impression, for any of you non-beer makers out there, there is a type of brew called a smash beer. And what smash is an acronym, and it stands for single malt, single hop. And it's a way for brewers to really learn their ingredients, learn what that single hop does, and learn what that single malt does. And you can make a lot of great beers that way, number one, but it also just really helps you learn your ingredients. And then, you know, most beers are, you start blending a little bit, maybe some hops, some malts. And in some ways, the smash beers are, they feel a little bit incomplete. And my perception here is that it's like a smash mead, you know, in that it's this single honey, single hop. It's an amazing way to learn what the ingredients do with each other. What does this honey do with this hop? You know, what can we learn from them? And for that, I think it's absolutely great. I think that if I were to try to make a commercial variety of this, you know, you might not keep it as a smash. You might do some blending, maybe some blending of this honey, some blending at the hops. For me, I thought that just a touch of sweetness would balance out against some of the acidity and the bitterness, and give it that really, really drinkable, or now I'm saying smashable, but I don't mean acronym smash. I mean, you know, drinking smash, smashable quality to it that Jeff was talking about as his lawnmower mead. But at the same time, I'm also drinking it at room temperature, where I'll bet you that if I dropped a few ice cubes in this and it muted some of the acidity and it muted some of the bitterness, I could just skull it. And it would just go down very smooth, very nice, and it would just be extremely pleasant to drink overall. So just, I guess, to sum up, is I thought overall it's an excellent effort. It's a wonderful learning experience, and because this is the first one that I've also had, I don't have a rank next to it yet.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much.
Did you get all that, Aaron?
Yeah, I may have to go back and put this episode on repeat a couple of times when I'm putting the pen to the paper here. But this is excellent.
I'm sending all my stuff to Ryan from now on to get good input.
My overall impression of this one, though, above all else, I would just say this is grapefruit. For me, it's grapefruit through and through.
Interesting how Ryan, you know, and I've heard Ryan say this before, that he always, you know, first time out, he'll try it at room temperature to get the true, or I don't know, true feel about it, or undisturbed, you know, because mine was right out of the refrigerator, and, you know, it was probably now 40 degrees or below. So it was ice cold when I drank it. And listening to Ryan, what a difference. And because I'm looking in my notes as he's talking, I'm going, man, I didn't get that. So it's pretty amazing just what the temperature does. And when, you know, I heard Jeff and Ryan talk about the carbonation, they almost sounded like they were drinking something different than what me and Chris were drinking. I thought it had a lot of carbonation to it when I first drank it. And, you know, and I don't know whether it has something to do with temperature, Ryan, you know, when it sits, and if you left it out at that temperature, whether the carbonation goes away. I have no idea, but, interesting.
My carbonation level here was what I would consider perfect for a cider. It wasn't real heavy, but it was there. It had good hiss when I popped the top.
Yeah, and I saw. I mean, you know, the bubbles rising off the bottom of my glass as I sat here at my desk and drank it. You know, so. But very interesting. Aaron, are you pleased with the rundown here from the guys?
Very pleased. No, I've just thoroughly enjoyed listening to everyone's comments and feedback on this, and it's just interesting to me to hear some of the similar things that all of you picked up. You know, I think some of the common themes that I heard are some maybe light citrusy elements in the aroma, whether that's the lemon or grapefruit, or I think as Ryan might have described, the light, bright fruit aromas. Interesting to hear some of the common things that you picked up in the flavor as well. You know, so this was the floral hop. And one thing I was thinking might be interesting to do is at this point in the podcast would be just to read some of the descriptions from the Northern Brewer website about this hop, which is largely what went into my selection process here when selecting some of the different hops. So, you know, this one is described as mild, spicy, and floral. It is mild and pleasant aroma with spicy and flowery tones that add character to your homebrewed beers. So just interesting to hear everybody's thoughts on this. Cool. One last comment too. This is actually probably the least bitter of the hops that I chose. This has an alpha acid range of between 2 and 4.5%. So kind of on the lower end of the spectrum there.
And we've got two more meads to go from Aaron. And I know we've got some scheduling issues coming up here in the next couple of shows. And I wanted everybody to be together. So we'll talk about this after the show tonight and see how we're going to approach the other two. As we wrap up here tonight, I wanted to throw this out there. I had this, and Ryan was kind enough to get involved in this with me. I had this stout going, and what is that? Some kind of racket as it gets quiet. I had this stout thing going, and I don't know if it's happened to it, but it's kind of running along the 71B line here. It started out like gangbusters. And this is a beer kit that I picked up from Midwest Supply, and it was one of those beer dot simply beer things. So I was a little suspicious at first because they're only like $20. Put it together, it fermented like gangbusters, and then it kind of just quit at around 0.20, and it should have gone down to at least 0.12. So you know, it was headed for the drain, and I thought, you know what, I'm gonna call Ryan and see what he thinks. So I shot him a couple of notes. I said, hey, what would you do with this? And so we talked, and it came down to a couple of options. And one was to make up a bochet and use that as a blend and blend this stout, which is sitting at about 3.9%, and blend it with a bochet. And then we got to talking about, well, you know, what if I just dump the honey into the stout? What do you think would happen? And so we discussed it back and forth, and I let him know today that that's exactly what I did. I had two different kinds of caramelized honey. I had some really light stuff, really marshmallowy, really nice caramely flavored that I had sitting in a half-gallon mason jar, and it was about 3 pounds, Ryan, when I put it on the scale. And so I added 1 pound of the really dark stuff. And so I dumped all of that into on top of this stout and mixed it up and tossed in, dry-pitched a package of SO5 yeast. This, of course, after I racked it into a 6-gallon carboy just to make sure I had, you know, room for anything might, you know, float up towards the top. Within an hour of pitching the yeast, it's already bubbling. I have no idea what I'm going to wind up with, but I figured, what the hell? A way to salvage a potential drain cleaner. So you never know what's going to happen. So
yeah, we'll be excited to hear how this one turns out.
Yeah, me too. You know, it already sat on some cocoa nibs and coffee beans. And the funny thing, I talked to Midwest Supplies about it today, and I said, look, I said, you know, this whole thing started out like gangbusters. But when I got it, you know, it fermented for 14 days. And when I got it into the fermenter, you know, I took a reading before I did, and it was like at 1.020. And I said, it was only 3.9. And I thought, well, that's kind of acceptable, you know, 4%, we can call it. That's okay. But then when I took a taste after I, you know, when I was racking it, it had this real watery taste to it. It didn't taste like the other stouts that I've done. So, you know, we went back and forth in some emails with Midwest. They weren't happy with the product, so they're actually sending me another beer kit on the house. I thought that was awfully kind of them. So a shout out to Mike W. at Midwest Supplies. Really appreciate you taking care of your customers. And I mean, this was at his suggestion, not mine. So very appreciative of the fact that they're looking out for their customers. So anyway, so we'll be reporting on that as time goes by. Next week, we've got a guest, Mazer Cup winner Greg Fisher, again from Wild Blossom Meadery in Chicago, will be joining us. And thanks to Ryan for that. So we'll let Ryan do all the introductions and possibly, you know, even conduct the interview, if you want to call it that. But hopefully he's going to come in and give us some pointers on making good mead at home. And maybe we can ask him about some of these holiday-themed type meads that we were talking about earlier, guys. You know, come to think of it, Ryan, those Jolly Ranchers, you're absolutely right. Now that I think about it, they didn't taste like watermelon at all. I wonder why that is. Anyway, why don't we call it a night, guys? Let's say we come back to the table next week. We'll do this all over again. Of course, the reminder to all our folks out there that this is not going to be a live show any longer. This will continue to be the podcast. You know where to get it. So we'll see everybody next week.